Man, what a great session. This has been so exciting to hear all these different ideas from people teaching and developing curriculum for R. I'm going to tell you about an R boot camp that I taught last summer. So I'm a PhD candidate at UC Davis, and as part of the Professors for the Future program there, I taught in the last week before the academic year started, 7 hours a day for 5 days. Let's get you up to speed in R. So this was mostly, well, here's the distribution of registrants. So mostly graduate students and a few postdocs and researchers, mostly people with no computing experience. So in 5 days, I'll get you ready to go into stats classes or to do basic analyses on your own. Came from a variety of disciplines across campus and spent a week in this windowless room with me at UC Davis. I want to start, so one of the key ideas that I've picked up and bring to my teaching is that motivation precedes detail, that we have to motivate first as teachers. So I want to try to motivate this talk by starting with the results. So I'm going to brag a little bit. These are student evaluations after the course. And the modal response on almost every question is a 5. Here's the overall quality of the course, quality of instruction. And this one I'm maybe more excited about than any other. This is inspired and motivated student interest in the course content. So these students, after 35 hours and 5 days, they finished up this course. They were psyched to go learn more R. That's a win. Let me tell you about how I did that. First, I want to say I don't deserve too much credit for this. So I'm building on a lot of prior work. These two books have been really influential for me. If you don't know Mindstorm, Mindstorms, it was written like 1978 about the coming revolution in education that computation was going to bring. I don't think that revolution has really come to pass, but I'm optimistic for it. It's a fantastic book, as relevant now as ever. How Learning Works is about research-based pedagogy, right? We can do research on student learning and design curriculum that comports with what we know works. And then these two organizations, can I just see by a show of hands, how many of you know sort of what software carpentry is and does? Okay, maybe about a quarter or a third. So these are both of these. Data Carpentry is an offshoot and sister organization of Software Carpentry. These are international nonprofits, almost entirely volunteer-run organizations that put on 2-day intensive introductions to computation. So they go around to corporations and universities and put on 2-day intro workshops taught by 3 or 4 volunteers. Typically covers, so Software Carpentry in 2 days covers Bash scripting, R or Python or MATLAB, and Git. It does that in 2 days. By the end of 2 days, students' heads are swirling, but they have some sense of how these things work. My goal with this was to take this model that Software Carpentry has developed, spread it out, take it from 2 days to 5. Instead of teaching 3 tools, teach 1. And instead of having like 30 to 40 students with 3 to 4 instructors, have 200 students with 1 to 4 instructors and helpers. I think I'll skip this in the interest of time. That's Greg Wilson, the founder of Software Carpentry, and some of the sort of guiding principles that I've picked up from him and the organization. So I want to walk through some strategies and tactics and talk about how I did this class. So first things first, motivation precedes detail. Way too many computing classes start with, here are the atomic data types in R. Here are data structures. And the students, you've lost them already, right? They don't care at that point. So I start with plotting. I'll show you this in a second. I have students making ggplots within the first 10 minutes of class. And they don't understand that there are nested function calls in that first line, but they can do it. They can tweak things and they're motivated to learn. And then when we circle back on the fundamentals, they're motivated to push through them. And then another key part of this, student enthusiasm never exceeds instructor enthusiasm. Right? Never, ever, ever will your students be more motivated than you are. So you just have to bring it. Right? You have to be excited. Teaching is first and foremost a performance art. I start with this. So before I even start teaching, I run this. This is part of a script that I run in the beginning, and I say, just let this wash over you. Don't worry about the details. This is stuff that you're going to learn how to do in the next few days. And I run through this. So I write a little function to take the baby names data set. You guys know the baby names data set. Take baby names, write a function to pull out a name and plot the popularity of the name colored by sex over time. Then I take the participants in the workshop's name. I'm using Jenny Bryant's Google Sheets package here. So I show off a little bit of like web interfacing, pull the student's name from a Google Sheet that has their information, and then run through this lapply to, first I create a directory, so I show file interfacing, and then generate a plot for each student's name and the graph of their name popularity over time, and then I open that folder and I say, look, I just made these 200 plots and they see their name, and I open one up and show them what it looks like. And all the students ooh and aah over that. Right? They're not learning the details, but they're, by the end of this, in 10 minutes, they're psyched to learn. Oh, this is what it looks like. My prior at this point is that Hadley is a woman. Okay, next up, live coding. This is a little tactic that makes a huge difference. Before I got into this, I thought this was crazy, right? Who wants to watch someone code? It seems super boring. It works a charm for a bunch of reasons. One thing, it slows me down, right? As teachers, we know R better than our students don't know R at all, so we can move through stuff quickly. The students are making a lot of connections and have to look at a lot of detail in the syntax. So coding live forces us to slow down, and it makes the pace parsimonious between how quickly the students can learn and how quickly we can express things. It's responsive and dynamic, so it keeps the classroom flexible, and there's a whole lot of research on pedagogy that shows that flexible, responsive teaching is more effective than having a set curriculum and just plowing through it. And then importantly, it teaches the process of coding. We see lots of the finished product of code, right? Every vignette on CRAN, every blog, it all shows the finished product of code. We very rarely see the process of producing code. And that's what the students actually need to learn. So by coding live, I'm up here, I make mistakes, I make typos, I forget how things work. And then I get errors, and I show the students how I read the error and how I trace that back to the code and identify where the problem is. And that teaches them how to go through that process. I say on the first day, welcome to coding, welcome to debugging, you'll be doing it for the rest of your life, right? Coding is at least half debugging. It's a big part of what we do, and we need to teach that in our curricula. Excuse me? More than 50, yeah. So part of that live coding is, again, this is a little tactic, but it works really well, rather than pacing half the room. So this is actually the beginning of that class. This is the very first thing that I do. And what I do is I have my R script in R Studio, and I'm projecting that. I save it in a Dropbox folder, and then I provide this link to the student. So by default, if you click on, you know, a file in Dropbox and say, give me the link, it'll take the clicker of that link to a page that like has some interface and lets them download the file. But you can substitute in this dl.dropboxusercontent link, and then it takes the person directly to that file. So for a .r file, it's called livescript.r. The students can load this in their browser, and then I save as I go. I'm typing, and I save, and the students can refresh this in their browser, and then they're typing with me, and if they make a mistake or they fall behind, they can copy-paste into our studio, and everything's up and running. And it also provides them with a permanent record of exactly what we did in class. Experiential learning. So I'll tell a story from yesterday. So yesterday morning, I went to a tutorial, and it was basically someone reading through a vignette. And there were no student exercises, and I was on email for most of the tutorial. And then yesterday afternoon, I'll name this one, I went to Joe Chang's Shiny tutorial. There were 4 exercises for the participants in the first hour, and it was awesome. Right? We were all engaged, we were learning, we were excited. Having the students doing this stuff is the only way to get them to learn. So I, as frequently as possible, take breaks. I try not to lecture for anything more than a half an hour at a time, then pause and give the students exercises of various lengths. Sometimes they're quick things, like take this bit of code and, you know, change where these variables are being mapped in a ggplot. And sometimes it's stuff that takes an hour, hour and a half. Here's a data set, develop some hypotheses and test them. And here are examples. And this speaks to something that I'm going to introduce later, or talk about more later. In the beginning, things are highly structured. Exercises are highly structured, right? So here is code for a ggplot. Change where these two variables are mapped in the plot. Here's how to do it, right? So it's really structured and minor changes. And then as we go, we circle back on the same things. The students are still learning ggplot, but they do it with more open-endedness so that they're making more connections among the various components of building scripts. So in the beginning, just swap out some variables, and then towards the end, take this data set, assess some hypothesis both graphically and with a statistical model. Do they comport with each other? That idea of iterating, coming back to the same ideas over and over again, and building in not only more advanced exercises, but more open-ended exercises, provides deeper understanding for the students. Frequent feedback. So I take a lot of feedback from my students, and I'll tell you about a few forms that I get it in. But it helps me pace the class, and it helps me stay responsive and dynamic to the students' needs, to how quickly they're absorbing the material, and to what they want to cover. Right? One way that I do that is with Google Forms, multiple choice questions. So this is a Google Form for a data carpentry workshop. It just has one question in it, four answers, and I reuse this form over and over and over. So the students have a link to this form. I put up some code and have them reason about it. What's the output of this code going to be, A, B, C, or D? Go to this website, put in your answer, and then this is what it looks like on my end. I put that up on the projector and say, okay, most of you got this right, but a few people had this wrong answer. Here's how we reason about that code. And now I know if the students get it and are ready to move on to the next thing, or if we need to stay there and revisit stuff. And then I clear the responses, and that's ready to go again in that same link that stays open in the students' browsers. I take feedback really frequently, and this comes in a variety of forms, but at the end of the morning session and at the end of the afternoon session, I have students give verbal feedback on what's working well and what do you think could use a change. And at the end of each day, I have students assess quantitatively how well they're learning the material. And then I go over that with the students at the beginning of the next session. So this is over that 5-day boot camp, student comprehension from not getting it at all to getting it extremely well. I think day one was great. That's about the distribution that I want to see. On day two, some students started to fall behind. So I started day three by presenting this graph and saying, hey, look, I see that some of you aren't getting this. We're going to slow down. We're going to go back over this material in a little more depth. And then by the end of day three, everyone's up to speed and psyched again. There's always a lot of variance in students. This is hard to handle. I do want to talk about stickies really quickly. So each student gets a red and a green post-it. These are super useful, right? They can put the red post-it up on their computer if they need help, right? And then an assistant can come around and help them without interrupting the class. They don't have to like, hey, teacher, stop. And they can put green stickies up if everything's going well, if they're done with an exercise. I can also use those for really quick multiple choice questions. Do you think something is this? Do you think something is this? And I get a bunch of flags in the audience. And then assistant. With 200 students, I had between 1 and 3 assistants at all times, and that was great. They were really good. It's critical to have them. Some challenges. dplyr is great, right? Within a couple of hours, students can do the vast majority of the things that they're going to do in data manipulation and analysis. But, and that some other speakers have talked about this, it's fundamentally different from base R. And to then circle back on base R bores the students and confuses the students. The dplyr mutate and summarize functions, there's an assignment in the function, and then the function returns a data frame, and that gets assigned to a variable. That's tricky for students up front, and I haven't quite figured out what to do with this yet. I don't think starting with base R stuff is right, but I don't quite know how to integrate this. In the boot camp, some of the exercises were too long. More frequent interruptions and short exercises are great. And then this, in a non-stats class, the variance in statistical understanding and comfort is huge. So for that, I would keep the stats out of it. That said, I do love integrating teaching statistical concepts with R concepts that I think you all recognize works beautifully. But that's for a stats class. Next up for me, really quickly, I want to do a little bit of shameless self-promotion. So I'm developing a social science curriculum for data carpentry. I'm excited about that. If you're interested in having a workshop like that at your organization, let me know. We just ran a pilot at UC Davis. It went great. We're excited to get that out to the community. And then I'm going to get my PhD, I think, and hope, at the end of this year. And then I want to keep teaching this stuff. I love R. I love teaching R. I love thinking about how to develop this stuff. So if you know of any opportunities for someone to pursue these lines, I want to put myself out there. And with that, I want to thank Greg Wilson for teaching me a bunch of this stuff, Tracy Teal, the head of Data Carpentry, for giving me the opportunity to develop some curriculum around this stuff. Noam Ross for bringing me into R and into software carpentry. And then three key assistants who gave up the better part of a week to help put on that class. Mavanwi and Nick are both here. They're both awesome. And Mike Koontz as well. Thanks.
Great presentation. And we have time for questions. So, yep, please.
That's great. So I should send out another post-assessment. So it's been 9 months now. I should see how students are doing now, how they've done in their classes. I don't have any data on that. I've taught quarter-long stats courses in R. I've never taught a quarter-long R-focused class, so I can't really make that comparison. But I can say that the trial by fire works well. We got 400 registrants in a week for this class, for UC Davis people alone. So the demand for this thing and the willingness to put aside a week and do this by fire is certainly there.
Other questions? Yes, please.
Yeah. So the stickies, instructors, advanced exercises. So I've somewhere in here. This is not enough. There should be, for every exercise, there should be the basic thing that all the students can do, a like modestly advanced exercise, and then something really hard to keep the best students occupied. And then those stickies so that we know when most of the students are ready to move on, the red stickies for students who want a little bit of instructor interaction to help them move forward. But it's just intrinsic, right? You're not gonna be able to get all the students together.
And yes, please.
So on the first question, I've never had students work with their own data sets. I could certainly see bringing that in at the end of a two-day or towards the end of a week-long thing. Like first, let's all work together so that we're all answering and asking the same questions and we can help everyone fluidly. And then towards the end, take your data set, do some things. The instructors will be here to help you work through that. That seems like a great model. On base R versus Hadleyverse, I think we all need to talk about this. I love what Hadley's doing. I use ggplot and dplyr every day, but it is a different language than base R. And there's some divergence there. And I think dplyr works great, right? Students are able in a few hours to figure out how to do almost everything they need to do. But they're left a little bit hamstrung. Starting with base R, it's harder to learn how to do all the things that they want to do. It I think, does take quite a bit more time. But it does provide them more flexibility, and then they can move into Hadleyverse again, but then that's a second syntax. So I'd love to talk more about that. I don't have an answer for it.
We have time for last question. Yes, please.
So this was pretty wide. I think the modal student was a master's in statistics. This was pretty hacky data cleaning of the students' typed responses of what department or graduate program they're in, but a pretty good range. Certainly social scientists, a lot of biological scientists, and a lot of statisticians.
So we have five great presentations. Let's thank all the speakers.